Dr. George Dimitri, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute.
Over the past 5 years, 51% of all FDA-approved cancer drugs have had substantial input from Dana-Farber scientists and clinical investigators. And that comes from the culture here, the very basic curiosity-driven scientists that are probing really how cancer works.
At Dana-Farber, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Good morning. I'm Claire Thornton, and this is Five Things. It's Sunday, September 20th. These Sunday episodes are special. We're giving you more from in-depth stories you may have already heard. The federal courthouse in Louisville, Kentucky, will be closed this week as the city anticipates a decision in the investigation of Breonna Taylor's death at the hands of police. This week, Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron could announce whether Sergeant Jonathan Mattingly, Officer Miles Cosgrove, and former Officer Brett Hankinson will be charged with murder or other offenses related to the Breonna Taylor case. On this episode, we're explaining what happened the night of March 13th, when police killed Breonna Taylor. Cops were there to execute a search warrant related to a suspect and an address 10 miles away from Breonna Taylor's apartment. Reporters from the Louisville Courier-Journal, which is part of the USA Today network, are helping their community and the country understand what happened. Local journalists Tessa Duvall and Darcy Costello wanted to get the best Breonna Taylor information into the hands of everyday people in Louisville. So they started an email newsletter called The Breonna Taylor Case. You can subscribe to the newsletter at the link in the episode notes. As Louisville and the country await the decision of Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron, I wanted to talk to Tessa and Darcy and learn how we got to this moment. Thanks for joining me today. So what do protesters in Louisville say they want, and what are some of their demands?
So the protests have been going on in Louisville for more than 110 days at this point. And what started very specifically focused on Breonna Taylor and, to an extent, George Floyd and other instances of police shootings and police violence, it has since really expanded. I mean, people are talking about gentrification. They're talking about employment opportunities in the West End of Louisville. They are talking about access to, you know, food and resources in their communities, and what a more just and equitable Louisville looks like. You go downtown in Louisville and you see signs for Breonna Taylor, and you see signs for David McAtee, another man who was fatally shot during the protests in Louisville. But you also see people talking about, you know, what does a more just city look like? You know, how can Black residents of Louisville more fully be incorporated into the decision-making process that, you know, affects their everyday lives?
I think a consistent demand from the protesters throughout this 110 plus days has been arresting and firing the officers involved in Breonna Taylor's killing by police. And that has not gone away. One of the officers has been fired, but we're still waiting on a decision on criminal charges from Attorney General Daniel Cameron and an FBI investigation that's still ongoing. And so as you have this movement calling for justice for Breonna continuing and sort of expanding, you also have this consistent thread from the very start of wanting to see some action taken against the officers that fired their weapons at her apartment that night. And so I think it's been interesting that that hasn't gone away this entire time. And it's still definitely like one of their main calls in terms of justice for Breonna and what that means.
So one of the officers in this case, Brett Hankinson, has been fired already. Is he appealing that? What's next for the other officers?
One of the three officers to fire their weapons at Taylor's apartment that night is Brett Hankinson. He's the only one to have been fired so far. He was fired on June 23rd, and he had a window to appeal that, and he did. He appealed it to the Police Merit Board, which in Louisville is a five-member board with members appointed by the mayor and approved by the Metro Council. And one of their functions is reviewing police discipline cases. And in discipline cases, you actually have two police officers who serve as additional members of the board with voting power. And interestingly, until he was fired, Brett Hankison was one of the officers who served on the Police Merit Board, making decisions about discipline cases. And so he appealed to that board once he was fired, and it's being held in abeyance, which means that he won't get a public hearing or a review of the evidence in the case until after his criminal case, any criminal case that comes out of this is resolved. So it's sort of being held, it's like paused basically. And the board will be able to set aside the chief's order, create a new penalty, or reinstate him. So that'll be something to watch for depending on the decision on criminal charges that we're waiting for. And then the other officers that fired their weapons that night, Jonathan Mattingly and Miles Cosgrove, have been administratively reassigned, along with an additional officer who didn't fire his weapon that night, but was involved in getting the warrants for Breonna Taylor's house and the other homes that were searched that night. And he's also been administratively reassigned. And so if there are no criminal charges from Daniel Cameron or from the FBI, then the department's normal policy is that an internal investigation looking at if they violated department policy will start. That's through the department's professional standards unit. And that could lead to discipline, like from a written reprimand to termination. It's a pretty wide ranging option there, but so those officers could still face some kind of administrative consequence even if they don't get charged criminally.
So everything you just said is regarding individual police officers. What changes has Louisville's police department implemented already, and what reforms have they agreed to institute going forward?
One of the biggest changes for police that's come out of this case has been Breonna's Law, which was passed by Metro Council and signed by the mayor. That banned no-knock warrants and required that body cameras be on and activated during future search warrant executions. But the department itself has gone through a lot of changes outside of just reforms. We've seen a chief fired for the death of David McAtee on June 1st, when it was discovered that police officers, there was no body camera footage from that incident. And then an interim chief was named, and that interim chief has since announced that he'll be retiring on October 1st. And so we have a new interim chief, and all the while a national search is going on for a permanent chief. And we've also seen that a civilian review board work group was created to sort of look at how the how the city can have oversight of the police department moving forward. And they're looking for subpoena powers from the state. We've gotten a top to bottom review of LMPD started by an outside group that's looking at policies and culture and how to better police the city. Other changes include requiring chief approval for tear gas moving forward. That was in response to criticisms for how the police responded to ongoing protests. And then the most recent list of reforms came out of a $12 million settlement that the city reached with Taylor's family this week. It included a laundry list of reforms for the police department that included everything from encouraging officers to do 2 hours of community service per week to having commanding officers review search warrants, having EMS on scene when search warrants are executed, having body camera footage of officers counting any cash they seize from warrants, having a team of social workers for dispatched runs. It was a pretty extensive list of reforms that Taylor's family really wanted to see included in the settlement. And Breonna Taylor's mother, Tamika Palmer, has said that throughout this negotiation process, it was one of her priorities to make sure that there wouldn't be another Breonna. And these, I think the hope is that these will prevent something similar from happening in the future.
Can you tell us a bit more about why this civil settlement that Breonna Taylor's family reached is so historic?
The settlement is the largest payout in Louisville's history when it comes to police action. The previous largest settlement was several years ago, and it was for $8.5 million related to a wrongful conviction and a detective's role in securing that wrongful conviction. Now, the money is obviously a big part of it. Like, that's what's grabbing people's attention. $12 million is obviously a lot of money. But what's also really significant about this is that laundry list of reforms that Darcy just took us through. You know, that is something that, as Brianna's attorneys have explained, can really only be secured through negotiation and a settlement. You know, a jury does not have the authority to implement reforms like that. You know, a jury doesn't have the power to negotiate with the police union. The jury doesn't have the power to change standard operating procedure at a police department. And so this is something that the family was really insistent upon, was, as Darcy said, making sure that what happened to Brianna doesn't happen again. And they felt the best way to do that was to use the settlement to leverage those kinds of reforms.
So how has Breonna Taylor's case evolved compared to the case of George Floyd?
When George Floyd was killed by police, there was immediate backlash over that. There was immediate action taken. So that happened, you know, in the plain view of people on the street. You know, there was immediate camera footage. People could see with their own eyes what happened to George Floyd. But what happened to Breonna Taylor happened in the middle of the night in a private apartment. And one of the people involved is dead. And so it is essentially the word of her boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, and what he saw, what he thought, what he experienced, against police officers who, as we know, have a lot of protection when it comes to doing their jobs. So, you know, there were no other witnesses to what happened to Breonna Taylor who wasn't involved directly in some point. Like, sure, we have neighbors who called into 911 and reported gunshots, but they weren't inside the apartment. They weren't participants in that chain of events and didn't see it with their own eyes. And so Breonna died in March. It's been more than 6 months since she died. And it took 2 or 3 months just for people around the country to know her name. Even in Louisville, I would think that a lot of people probably didn't know the name Breonna Taylor until it started gaining traction across the nation. And that really has to do with people on the national scale. So attorney Ben Crump, who is involved in a lot of these high profile cases, he made a point to say her name everywhere he went. Then you also have celebrities like Beyonce was probably one of the first really, really big ones, who wrote a letter on her birthday to Daniel Cameron and also, you know, posted a birthday wish to Breonna on her birthday. And so, you know, Beyonce and other celebrities have done a lot to draw attention to Breonna's case. And, you know, there has not been that kind of immediate response, that immediate resolution, the way we've seen in other cases where body camera footage exists. You know, we talked about how protesters really want to see, and the family really wants to see, officers fired, arrested, charged, and convicted for Breonna's death. And, you know, we've seen some of those steps taken in other cities, like in the cases, like the case of George Floyd. But in Breonna's case, only one officer has been fired, and we're still waiting to find out if others may be fired, if any of them will be charged. And that pace is certainly really, really frustrating and upsetting to people in the community who are following this case. And, you know, at this point, you know, we know an announcement from Attorney General Daniel Cameron could come any day. He's had the case since May. But are they going to be charged with murder? legal experts say that's really unlikely. So we are now in this situation in the community where no matter what happens, it's going to be impossible to make everybody happy, to come up with some sort of resolution to this that is satisfying.
Going back to something you said earlier, it's the word of Kenneth Walker, Breonna Taylor's boyfriend, against the word of the police. And something that's upsetting is that the police account is hotly disputed. How so?
From the get-go, it has been really hotly disputed between the officers and attorneys for Breonna's family and her boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, what actually happened that night. So that first day when there was the press conference that the police department has, you know, announcing that there was this police shooting, they said that officers were executing a search warrant and they knocked and announced. And when Breonna's family filed a civil suit in April, you know, one of the things that is clear in that suit is that no one heard police say they were police. You know, at that point, they had gone out, they had talked to neighbors, and they didn't find neighbors who said that they heard police announce themselves. And so it turns out that even though officers did secure a search warrant with a no-knock clause, that they did knock. Now it's the announcement that is actually in question. And so all of this really matters because inside the apartment, Kenneth Walker, who's Breonna's boyfriend, said that they're yelling out, who is it? Who's there? And they're not hearing anything back. Kenneth Walker is a legal gun owner and he grabs his gun because he thinks that an intruder, maybe it's one of Breonna's ex-boyfriends, is trying to get into the apartment. And so when police on the outside use a battering ram to enter the apartment, that's when Kenneth Walker fires a shot. He describes it as a warning shot. And because of that shot, police then return fire. You know, three officers start shooting back. And that is how Breonna dies. And so, you know, this contention of did Kenneth Walker know it was police or not is so important because that's how the gunfire started. You know, if he knew that was a police officer on the other side of the door, which he says he didn't, then his firing at them is legally, it is, that's a different standard, right? Like if you knowingly fire at a police officer who has announced himself, that's one thing. But if you are firing upon someone, an intruder who has broken in your front door and you don't know who it is, that's an entirely different thing in the legal system. And so that is what a lot of this hinges on. You know, at one point, Kenneth Walker was charged with the attempted murder of a police officer. And those charges have been dropped because the Commonwealth attorney said that there needed to be more investigation. And in the Commonwealth attorney's words, it's possible that there wasn't a criminal offense on either side of the door. And so really, you know, that is why there is such a point of contention over did officers announce themselves and did Kenny and Breonna know that it was police at the door?
Another part of why the police account is so disputed is a reflection of the department's approach to this entire case, the department and the city, I'd say. There hasn't been a ton of transparency. There's a number of factual documents that haven't been released. Breonna Taylor's autopsy, for example, or police interviews that have not leaked out. We have one interview with Sergeant Mattingly, and we have Kenneth Walker's police interview, but presumably a number of other officers were interviewed, gave statements, explained their understanding of what happened. There's been a question about if there's any body camera footage from officers who arrived at the apartment after the shooting itself took place. And so not releasing those records and having some of the records that have been released raise questions. For example, in an incident report that came to light this summer, it listed that Breonna had no injuries, which we obviously know is not the case. And in another document, it referred to her as a suspect. So I think the combination of not having all of the information that like explains what took place, and having some questionable records released like lends itself to an overall questioning of the police account of what took place. And another, I just wanted to add on that another question that's since come up is if it was in fact Kenneth Walker who shot Mattingly. His civil attorney, Walker filed a lawsuit against the police department here in the past couple weeks. And that attorney raised questions about if it was Kenneth Walker's bullet that even hit Mattingly. He raised questions about like the angle at which it like would have hit him, and Kenneth would have had to been really low. And so, you know, I just feel that like the overall approach to transparency has sort of lent itself to questions and concerns from the community about the overall narrative from police about what took place.
Yeah, and we know that police did not try to resuscitate Brianna, correct?
Yeah, we know through our reporting, through the use of dispatch logs and other documents that we have been able to get our hands on, that once Sergeant Mattingly was shot, he was really their main cause of concern. There wasn't really any inquiry about if anyone inside the apartment or neighboring apartments, it's important to note because bullets did go into other apartments, was hit. So by the time police actually got to Brianna, she had already been lying in her hallway for at least 20 minutes or so, and it had already died at that point.
What are some of the biggest questions people have about why police were even there that night? We know there's a narcotics investigation that's tenuously tied to Brianna. And according to her family's attorneys, the case is also connected to conflict over gentrification in the city. Tell us more.
One of the things that Brianna Taylor's attorneys have questioned from the get-go is like, why were police even at her door? And they asked this question because police secured multiple search warrants for the night that Brianna died. And it was largely tied to houses in a neighborhood 10 miles away. And her connection to this was her ex-boyfriend. And so police had surveillance from January, and keep in mind this warrant was executed in March, about Brianna being in connection with this ex-boyfriend. She was seen on a poll camera outside of this house 10 miles from her apartment. Police observed this individual going to her apartment and getting a box. And so they wrote in the affidavit for the search warrant that, you know, they believed she may be receiving drugs for him, holding cash for him, that kind of thing. And so the night that Brianna died, officers executed three other warrants at neighboring houses in this neighborhood that was 10 miles away. And attorneys for her family have argued, and there are some documents that we've seen that support this idea, that they found their main suspect, they found his drug stash, they found his cash at this house. And so if they found him at midnight, then they raised the question of why did they go to Brianna's house 40 minutes later, and why did they need to bust in her door at the middle of the night if they'd already located this guy, they'd already located the drugs they say he was selling and the cash that he got from selling those drugs. And so taking a step even further back, the attorneys argued in a filing over the summer that the reason they were even interested in this ex-boyfriend of Brianna's, his name is Jamarcus Glover, that they're only interested in him because of this house that he is basing this alleged criminal operation from, that it's on a street where the city has already done a tremendous amount of investment. They've been buying up abandoned properties. They've been buying out owners who are looking to sell. They've been tearing down, properties that are in disrepair. And attorneys for Brianna's family allege that they're doing this because it's part of an effort to gentrify and redevelop the area. And so Brianna's connection to gentrification is that essentially that the police were trying to get this accused drug dealer out of this neighborhood so the city could then redevelop it. And Brianna was just connected because she may or may not, in the police's perspective, been involved in that to some extent. And it's important to note that officers did search Breonna's apartment after the shooting. They did find some letters, some mail for this ex-boyfriend, but they didn't find cash and they didn't find drugs in Breonna's apartment.
So we're waiting any day now for Attorney General Daniel Cameron's decision.
Right. So in Louisville, we've really been waiting sort of on pins and needles for what Attorney General Daniel Cameron will decide. There have been rumors all summer that he's close to a decision. He's been really largely silent about the time frame for his decision and what investigative steps he's taken. And so I feel like the city itself is sort of bracing for that decision to come any day now. But in addition to that investigation, the FBI has also opened its own independent investigation into the case, which just based on FBI investigations will probably be some length longer than Cameron's. And the Metro Council has also opened an investigation into the mayor's administration. That investigation from Metro Council is expected to look not just at the Breonna Taylor case, but also at the death of David McAtee and the city's response to ongoing protests for racial justice. And they have so far focused largely on the protest aspect of things, sort of acknowledging that they don't want to interfere with the ongoing investigations into the Breonna Taylor case and David McAtee's death. But they have subpoena powers and have already subpoenaed city officials in their examination of the response to protests. So it could turn out that there's some interesting information that comes to light through that investigation, in addition to a decision on criminal charges from Cameron's office and the FBI working with the U.S. Department of Justice.
There are different decisions Cameron could make regarding the police. What is his decision going to mean for Louisville and the national movement?
Ben Crump, one of the attorneys involved in this case, has often said that he thinks Breonna Taylor's name is a turning point for police killings of Black women. That much like we know the names Emmett Till and Trayvon Martin, that Breonna Taylor's name is going to go down in history that way, especially for Black women, because the cases of Black women who die in these circumstances often don't get the same kind of attention and outcry the way that we see with Black men. That's, you know, the driving point behind the Say Her Name movement. Now, in terms of what it means for Louisville, if there are or are not charges, no one is going to walk away from whatever it is that Attorney General Cameron does happy. Like, not everyone is going to be satisfied no matter what he does. Just based on the law as we know it and the tremendous amount of protection that police officers have, it seems incredibly unlikely that all three of the officers who fired their guns are charged with murder. It just legally, experts that, you know, the Courier Journal has spoken to don't see that as a possibility.
So the protesters have been calling consistently for justice for Breonna. And as we talked about a little bit before, that has come to mean a number of different things. But I think a determination on criminal charges will sort of determine how justice for Breonna looks moving forward. If it turns out that justice for Breonna is not going to mean murder charges for the three officers, then I think protesters and the city and honestly the country can start to talk about, you know, does it mean lasting policy changes in addition to what we've already seen? Do they want to start moving toward addressing, you know, some of the things Tessa mentioned, gentrification, other systemic racism in the city?
No, I think you bring up a really important point, because even in settling the civil suit, which is different than this resolution to whatever it is that Daniel Cameron decides in terms of criminal charges or no charges, even in like settling that civil suit, the family and the attorneys and really the community see that as like a launching point into further reforms and further change. That, like, just because they've secured some changes doesn't mean that they're done. Like, they are still engaged in this action for the foreseeable future. You know, they're not satisfied with just the dozen reforms and commitments that they've gotten already. And even if there are no criminal charges, they certainly still feel that there's a lot of work to be done, both in Louisville and at the state level.
Yeah, decision aside, we're going to see a lot more calls for change in Louisville. Tessa Duvall and Darcy Costello, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much.
If you want to learn more from Louisville Courier-Journal reporters Tessa Duvall and Darcy Costello, subscribe to their newsletter, The Breonna Taylor Case. I've put a link in the episode notes. And you can keep up with Tessa and Darcy on Twitter, too. They're at Tessa Duvall and at DC Tello. Again, Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron's decision on whether to charge Louisville Metro police officers in the case of Breonna Taylor is anticipated any day. If you liked this episode of Five Things, let us know by leaving us a rating and review. Taylor Wilson will be back tomorrow morning with Five Things You Need to Know for Monday. Thanks for listening. I'm Claire Thornton. See you next Sunday. Until then, keep up with me on Twitter at @Claire_THORNTO.
Dr. George Dimitri, medical oncologist, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute.
Over the past 5 years, 51% of all FDA-approved cancer drugs have had substantial input from Dana-Farber scientists and clinical investigators. And that comes from the culture here, the very basic curiosity-driven scientists that are probing really how cancer works, and then the expert clinicians that interact with patients and families every day. It's not easy to have input at a substantive level to new drugs that are safe and effective at treating cancer. So our whole mantra has always been to try to minimize risks to patients and yet try to maximize the opportunity of finding how effective a new treatment could be. And that means understanding cancer really, really deeply.
At Dana-Farber, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at DanaFarber.org/everywhere.